I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's mentally yours.
Hello and welcome back to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's mental health podcast. I'm Rachel Moss, Metro's lifestyle editor, and shortly I'm going to be joined by author and journalist Tanis Carey. Today we'll be chatting about anhedonia, which is the reduced ability to feel pleasure. But before that, we've been hearing from you, our listeners, once again. We've been getting you to get in touch and share with us how you've been looking after your mental health this week. I have to admit, I have personally done an absolutely terrible job this week, which I think is also important to say sometimes. I have said yes to too many things. I have not left myself enough time for the joy and the fun things, although I did manage to squeeze in a dance class on Monday evening, which always makes me feel a bit happier. So I'm very excited this week in particular to have a reset and listen to how your weeks have been going for a bit of inspiration.
One of my mental health hacks is to have a change of scenery. So whether that's going to a different room, going outside, and even having a walk.
So this week I'm focusing on eating really lovely, healthy food. It brings me joy and it makes me feel good. So obviously, why not? I'm planning loads of healthy dinners and then some sweet treats kind of sprinkled during the week as well. I think having things to look forward to and then the structure just kind of keeps my mind in order and keeps me happy.
Mentally yours.
We're now joined by Tanis Carey, who's a mental health journalist and author of the book Feeling Blah: Why Anhedonia Has Left You Joyless and How to Recapture Life's Highs. Tanis, thank you so much for joining us today. So first things first, can you please explain what is anhedonia? And please, for the love of God, tell me if I'm saying that incorrectly. Am I saying it correctly? And what is it?
Yes, no. So it's said as it's spelt, which is handy. And anhedonia is the loss of enjoyment in things that you used to love, or finding it really, really hard to feel joy. And it's not actually a new word. It was actually sort of invented in about 1897 by a French psychiatrist, psychologist, and he identified it in a paper he was writing. But in and out after that, it's become more of a kind of clinical use. So like psychiatrists and psychologists and brain researchers will know what anhedonia is. But I thought it was really interesting that the general public, the general reader, even people who think they know a lot about psychology and self-help actually haven't heard this word before. And I do think that it's time that we address the middle ground in mental health, which is what I feel anhedonia is.
Yeah, because it's different from depression, right? So even though it's feeling without joy, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're depressed.
Yeah, absolutely, Rachel. So it can be a symptom of depression. It is on the DSM-5 of something that you could struggle with. It's one of the things that actually makes depression really difficult to overcome, because it means that you're losing your motivation to do things that will make you feel better. But what I discovered during writing the book was it's also, there's a lot of research on it as being a standalone condition. So you could be functioning, you could be getting up, you could be kind of looking okay to the rest of the world, you could be going to work, you could be going through the motions, but you actually wouldn't be feeling a lot of joy or inner emotion, or you would just be kind of feeling on the outside of life. It would be like looking at the world through a glass window, or sort of steamed up window, or just not being entirely present, not being able to feel the full range of emotions. I mean, and that includes sort of, you know, sadness and as well as happiness. So you could feel blocked, like zombie-like, kind of burnt out. But basically what anhedonia often is it's like an emotional flatlining. So you are just not experiencing the full range of emotion, and particularly joy. And that's what most people notice most.
Yeah. So what prompted you to start exploring this, like particularly in your own life?
Yeah. So I think that anhedonia is very much something that's becoming more prevalent in the modern world. I mean, the modern world, we have the things that we think we want, we get them more, we get our needs met more easily, we live in a convenient society, most of us have a roof over our head, most of us have enough to eat, but yet as the convenient society becomes more prevalent, why is it that our mental health is going down? I mean, it's almost in freefall, which, considering that, you know, the whole of the modern world is predicated into towards things that are supposed to make you happy, what exactly is going wrong here? So I noticed it myself when I'm an author, and I had a call from my agent, and she said that I'd got this book deal that I'd been waiting for. And I could feel myself on the phone say, oh, that's great, that's fabulous, oh yeah, brilliant, you know. But as I put the phone down, I realized I didn't feel any actual joy. You know, I just felt like, oh, this is just one more task for my to-do list. And I realized that I wasn't alone in this. And I kept thinking about this. And one night I went in search of this feeling, because once I kind of isolated that, I kind of noticed it more and more. You know, I love Christmas, but even on Christmas Day, I couldn't really enter into it. Or I'd be at a party and everyone seemed to be having a good time, but I always seemed to be on the outside. Or, you know, I just didn't really seem to be able to kind of enjoy my life, even though I was sort of rushing through the tick box of things that you were supposed to have achieved. So I realized that I probably wasn't alone. Then I went in one night, I tell the story in the book, where I was sort of, you know, because anhedonia also feels like a guilty secret, because obviously we live in a world where people might be a lot worse off than us. They might have a lot more severe mental health difficulties. And so we tend to kind of keep it like a little bit of a guilty secret. We think, oh, well, what have I got to moan about? You know, I'm not depressed and I'm functioning. So one night while my partner was asleep beside me, I sort of guiltily Googled it. And I was like, why aren't I enjoying my life? And then up it popped anhedonia. And then I looked further. And I mean, I'm a health and psychology sort of like journalist. So I was like, well, you know, why is it that like no one's talking about the middle ground? You know, we're talking about happiness and joy at one end and, you know, despair and depression at the other. But like the middle ground, the gray area, is where most of us are living. But why aren't we talking about that? So I just really felt that anhedonia is the missing word in our mental health conversation. And, you know, I think we could say, okay, well, we should be like happy or not depressed. But actually, you know, we're not actually flourishing. We're not at our most creative when we're in anhedonia or blah. You know, it could take one more stressor and that could tip you over the edge into burnout. You know, and also you're not really enjoying life. You're not spreading that. Say if you have kids, you know, if you have a partner, you're not spreading that around you. We're just living in a kind of zombie-like state, you know, not really. And no, I think what the world needs now is people who can live up to their potential and not just be kind of surviving, which is what a lot of us are doing.
Absolutely, yeah. So interesting there, you mentioned like tick box and you had all the kind of pillars of success fulfilled. I'm wondering, is it because we've got such, I guess, rigid ideas of what success looks like and what we should be achieving, do you think that is also maybe impacting people's mental health? Like how, you know, if you've got those things and then you don't feel fabulous, what next? Is that a big factor in it?
So I mean, over the last sort of 40-50 years, we've been told, particularly in a capitalist model, that this is what we're supposed to want. But yet, you know, we're living a life still often lost and without meaning. And I think that's why we're saying kind of the great resignation and tick people resigning their jobs on TikTok and, you know, wanting to retire early, because they realize is that sort of having those material needs met is not enough to get your emotional needs met. And often we're living in a world that is so incredibly stressful, like whether it's from work, or it's from social media, or it's from news alerts. And, you know, this means that our cortisol level or our stress hormones are always raised. They never get a chance to reset. And, you know, and I look at a lot of neuroscience in the book, and I spoke to some of America's top neuroscientists on joy. And what I realized was that's like the impact that cortisol has on our dopamine and serotonin. It basically means that it dampens them down. And the thing about cortisol is that once it spikes, say you get an email from your boss saying you're behind with a deadline, it doesn't go down right away. A cortisol spike stays in your body for an hour, whereas a dopamine spike will stay in your body for 5 minutes. So you see there's a dramatic imbalance here. And so a lot of us are just feeling completely overwhelmed a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You spoke to some amazing experts in your book. And one of the bits I was really fascinated by was the hormones, and in particular, women's hormones, and how they may be a contributing factor to having this feeling. I'm a journalist who specialized in women's health for years. So I have a real bee in my bonnet about there's not enough research about women's health still. Why all the studies tailored to men? For those who haven't read your book yet, tell us a bit about what you discovered and why hormones in particular for women might play an extra factor in experiencing this feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's been a bit of a taboo subject, but I mean, I think that you know, because people didn't want to sort of say that women were kind of like their moods were sort of more related to their hormones. But I think the neuroscience and the endocrinology shows that, you know, there are clear fluctuations in basically how hormones affect mood over the course of not only the month, but also the lifespan. So one of the things I discovered was that estrogen has a very clear knock-on effect on dopamine and serotonin. And also, as we head towards menopause, basically estrogen buffers cortisol. So that as our cortisol, and this is not actually just in menopause, but over the course of the month. So as our estrogen starts to drop, then our cortisol or our stress hormones become more exposed. So we feel less able to cope, more anxious, all these kind of things. So, you know, I think simple awareness of our cycles and our hormonal fluctuations over the lifespan are really going to help with us. And also, it's not just women. You know, I think that hormones don't fluctuate in men quite as much, but like, you know, over the lifespan, you know, a drop off in testosterone will also have an effect on happiness hormones, happiness chemicals like dopamine and serotonin and oxytocin. So, you know, I think with this book, you know, it's all about awareness. I think that what's interesting about the life of the world we live in is like we kind of think that if we tick all these boxes, that miraculously we're going to be happy or something's going to make us happy. But the point about this book is that like modern life doesn't actually make happiness an easy state to achieve. So we have to start understanding how happiness is made in the brain, what can affect it, and use that kind of neuroscience and that endocrinology to push back. Because otherwise we're still going to continue this free fall.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can really get trapped in a cycle, which kind of brings me to the big question I have for you on this. How do you get out of that cycle? Because there will be so many people listening to this, I think, like nodding along going, Yep, feeling the lack of joy, feeling the pressures, feeling the burnout, modern society pressures and all the rest of it, but they're there. You can't get rid of social media overnight. You can't get rid of work overnight, especially in the current economic crisis. So what do you do?
Absolutely. So the whole third of the book is devoted to being a toolkit. But like, because, you know, not everybody's anhedonia has the same causes. So, you know, what I wanted to do was present an evidence-based kind of selection of things that people could cherry pick for their lives. I mean, the first thing is that, like, even if you don't buy the book or you just listen to the conversation, the first thing you have is awareness that there is a word. Blah is a state of being. It's not just you. It shouldn't be the status quo. Life isn't supposed to be meh. You can do something about it. So just awareness of your emotional state and that it's in your control. I think also what I learned, because obviously in my journey out of anhedonia and talking to all these amazing neuroscientists and looking at all the research, was that creating mood states is more in your control than you realize. So, you know, for example, you raised the example of social media. So social media is great for getting short-term dopamine hits, but it's also very powerful at really depleting your serotonin, because serotonin is a neurotransmitter of status. So every time you go on LinkedIn, you see someone, your colleague has got a fabulous new job, or a friend of yours has got 500 likes on their latest picture and you've got five, you know, your serotonin goes down. So I think a lot of it is about thinking about the inputs that you feed your brain. So for example, you know, with social media is not going to go away, but I think that we can use it for the good. We can curate our experiences. We can notice. I think a lot of this is about interception. It's about noticing feelings and emotions as we feel, as we experience them, and then doing something about it. So for example, my social media, if I only follow accounts that I feel educate me or make me feel good. And I don't think that's denial. I think that's just basically feeding my brain better inputs as well. I think also, like, one of the things I talk about in the book is concept of spark. And spark is something that we all have inside ourselves. We probably did it as kids. It's an activity or a talent or something we're naturally drawn towards. It might be kind of, you know, looking after animals or counseling your friends or, you know, giving advice or gardening or art or, you know, fashion. It could be any of those things that you are naturally drawn to, and to basically just find time for more of those. I mean, one of the great tools against anhedonia is something called behavioral activation. And that is doing something that you enjoy, even if you don't feel it in the moment, until the enjoyment comes back. So I think if you identify what makes you feel good, and you might have known this, as I said, you know, like, what extracurriculars did you do at school that you really loved? You know, what hobbies would you like to be doing if you had more time? And actually make a date with yourself to go back to those, even if it's just like an hour a week. So, and it's also about not taking too much on. I think that, you know, we tend to build up a lot of to-do lists, but we don't take tasks off those to-do lists. So I think it's about also kind of curating how many tasks you're giving yourselves and what you can reasonably drop or give to someone else, you know, without causing any problems. So I think it's about putting some more boundaries around your time. I mean, the research shows that the happiest people actually have 2 hours of time to themselves a day. Now, that is a tall order, especially if you lived in some highly industrialized, busy work thing and you're a young person sort of getting on with your career. But, you know, I think with intention and an awareness of what makes you happy, you can start to kind of get better control over your experience, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. People just listening to this won't be able to see me smirking, but every time you mentioned to-do lists and things like that, I was like, yeah, probably need to take on less and tackle my own. I think saying yes to too many things is possibly one of my biggest, I wouldn't say failures, it sounds quite strong, but one of my biggest challenges. Did you kind of discover what was at the root of your own feelings?
Yeah, so I went on a really fascinating journey. One of the other things I discovered was, like, childhood. So in childhood, I had a very chaotic childhood in which, like, my parents had got divorced. They went in different directions all over the world. I was kind of pulled between this thing and that thing. And, you know, I learned quite early on that if I felt good, it might get taken away from me quite quickly. So basically, I internalized also, and there's another word for you called cherophobia, which is like fear of happiness. So basically, even when I was a grown up and I was completely safe, if I felt good, I was like, oh, someone's going to take this away from me. I can't trust this. I better almost distract myself from it or almost do something to ruin it. So that was one of my reasons. So what I do with that now is I become aware of that visceral feeling and I go, okay, you're safe now. You're grown up. You're in control. No one's going to take this away from you. So that's sort of grounding techniques. My other issue with the reason I was in anhedonia because I was completely burnt out. I was completely burnt out. And I realize that now. I was so kind of dosed up with cortisol that, I mean, at the end of the day, I would just kind of lie in my bed, literally unable to speak. That's how bad I was. You know, but if someone had asked me one more thing, I would have just screamed. I was in burnout. So, yeah, burnout, I think, is a really big contributor to sort of, you know, anhedonia, particularly sort of like, you know, millennials and Gen X. Yeah, definitely. Gen Z, rather. Sorry. Yeah. And I think that we have to be aware of that. And I think that's why people are now making moves towards, like, no emails after work. You know, there's like that. There's a massive culture shift happening, and that's what this book is about. It's not just about anhedonia. It's about why modern life isn't making us happy and what we need to do about it.
And I guess like redefining success, because you're not successful if you're lying in bed wanting to scream at the end of the day.
I mean, how can we ignore the mental health statistics? It's terrifying. You know, and every successive generation that gets wealthier is getting less happy. So we have to kind of say that's enough. You know, we can't keep passing this on down the generations anymore. So I think we have to take a really, really big picture look.
Yeah, definitely. So you said at the start, you know, when you were in this real period of anhedonia, you were not really enjoying your career successes. You were maybe feeling a bit dull at parties, anything like that. Now that you've been on this massive, you know, voyage of self-discovery and book research, what does your life look like now? Like, how has all of that changed?
Right. So my life's totally changed. So anybody who knows me of old will say I was fairly intense, kind of serious, didn't crack a smile very much. Now I kind of, well, actually one of the first things I noticed when I came out of anhedonia was that I've started to like brighter colours. You know, I started to smile more easily. I started to cry more easily. I just felt like my emotions were getting unblocked. One of the things I also learned talking to neuroscientists is that dopamine is not the molecule of reward. It's the molecule of anticipation. So that means it's really important to have something always to look forward to and make a date with it. So every week I have something in my diary that I actually really, really look forward to. The other thing I've learned from the neuroscientists I spoke to was that joy is not one thing. It's actually three things. It's actually the anticipation, the appreciation in the moment, and also remembering it so you want to do it again. So I concentrate on each of those three phrases. So as I said, I look forward to things. When I'm in them, I try and savor them without thinking about my to-do list or what else I have to do. And then afterwards, I remember them. So, you know, I hate to use the G word gratitude, but unfortunately the science is so overwhelming on it that I can't say that. It's just mind-blowing what a difference gratitude can make. So, yeah, I mean, it's about sort of basically, you know, we all only have the same amount of time in the day, don't we? And obviously we can portion up slightly different. Obviously we'll have demands on our time, but at the same time, you know, we can make time to kind of put our mental health first. And then, because if we don't enjoy life, I mean, it's just a bit of a dreary existence.
Yeah. So it's about saying no. If you don't feel like you've got that time, because I'm sure a lot of people listening won't, it's about saying no to make it. Is that the solution? It's just saying no to things in order to make some time. I think a lot of people think, I'd love to be doing all of these things for my mental health, but I just don't have the time.
No, absolutely. I think it's about prioritizing. I mean, you know, I think that we can put some things to the fore and some things to the back. So, yeah, because, you know, if you're in a state of anhedonia, you can't give to other people either. You know, you can't spread joy. You know, you're not being your best self. You know, I think it's a sort of an act of self-care, which is actually good for other people. You know, I think it's good. I mean, you know, I think I also had to tell my partner that I'd been in anhedonia, because otherwise it's very difficult to come out of anhedonia unless your partner's with you. And then to commit to having more fun. I mean, who isn't going to kind of agree to that? So I think it is about just saying that fun is not frivolous. You know, enjoyment is not frivolous. It's just part of your. It's just a massive act of self-care, really.
I love that. Fun is not frivolous. What a great little nugget to take away with us. You've given us so many insightful things already, but the final question for you is something we like to ask all of our podcast guests, and that is, what is the one big lesson you've learned about your own mental health, and what message would you pass on to our listeners?
That would actually be to take notice of my bodily sensations. Because I remember, like, I would be in the kitchen and my kids and my husband would be really happy and, like, around me, and I just feel really uncomfortable. And one of the things that helped me get out of anhedonia was curiosity about that feeling. Like, why do I feel really uncomfortable here? On my wedding day, I also noticed this. I was in this beautiful church. It was a gorgeous wedding. I had my gorgeous husband looking at me. He was weeping with joy. And I was just looking there. I was thinking, hold on, I'm not really here. I'm kind of disassociated. I'm like, I'm not fully able to kind of experience this. And again, I got curious about that. And that's what led me to realize that as a child, I'd also learned to disassociate. And if you disassociate in childhood, that means you also disassociate in moments of like really intense emotion in adulthood too. So I think it's about introspection. It's about like, okay, noticing, how is this making me feel? And why is it making me feel that way? And then being really curious. because I think we're being kind of medicated by modern life into just kind of just to go into survival mode and just keep going and just keeping my head down and just kind of just get through the next day, get through the next day, get through the next day. So just really start to pay attention to those feelings.
Amazing. I think so much of what you have said will resonate with a lot of people listening. Just thank you so much. That was great.
It's mentally yours.
Thank you so much to Tana for being our guest today on Mentally Yours. If you've been affected by anything you've heard on the podcast, please call the Samaritans on 116 123. You can find us on our Facebook group, Mentally Yours, and on Twitter at @mentallyyrs. Thank you all for tuning in, and please don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes that are coming your way soon. Mentally Yours is produced by Pineapple Audio Production. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.